This program is proudly sponsored by Holistic Therapies by Camille. Fancying a full body massage with cup-in therapy to help you relax and release tension? Go to holistictherapiesbycamille.com to book yourself in.
Hello and welcome to another Joining the Dots here on Hospital Radio Glamorgan. That was Candy Staton and Young Hearts Run Free. And I'm Julie Kissick, welcoming you to an hour of great music and conversation. And if you're new to the show, I'm so pleased you found us. We focus on finding connections, raising awareness, and generally being the friend you may have longed for, or maybe you never knew you needed. In this week's show, we'll hear from Adam, a volunteer with the Samaritans. Our conversation follows on from last week's loneliness awareness theme, and I find out more about the charity, what it takes to be a volunteer, and why the Samaritans are always available for those who want to talk. And I've got some useful reminders on keeping cool for those of us experiencing the heat wave in the UK. More music first though, here's Stevie Wonder and You Are the Sunshine of My Life. Now last week was Loneliness Awareness Week, and loneliness is a really important topic that's often not acknowledged or is spoken about in hushed tones. Loneliness is the silent assassin. In 2023, the World Health Organization declared that loneliness is a pressing global health threat. And last year, the United Nations Health Agency reported that loneliness was linked to approximately 100 deaths every hour worldwide. That's more than 871,000 deaths annually. By contrast, strong social connections are associated with better health and longer life. And many of us will remember the famous telecoms company advert with the tagline, "It's good to talk." And while landlines may be less popular in 2026, and we seem to be losing the art of a great conversation in many quarters, it really is important to have them. So over the next hour, we'll hear from Adam, a volunteer with the Samaritans, a charity widely associated with trying to prevent suicide by having those important conversations with people in despair. Our conversation does touch on suicide, so please be aware, because that could be a trigger for some. But primarily, this is a discussion about Adam's reasons for becoming a Samaritans volunteer, and the many and varied conversations that he has with people that have called the Samaritans. So we're going to hear the first part of my interview with Adam. That's not his real name, because Samaritans volunteers use aliases. And Adam is the name that's been given to him by his local branch of the Samaritans. And I think the other thing that's really important to say here is that anonymity is obviously incredibly important for the caller and also for the volunteer. So Adam shares his reasons for becoming a volunteer. And this really is a fascinating conversation because, like Mandy, who was the death doula that I spoke to quite early on when Joining the Dots started, there was a very personal reason for Adam becoming a volunteer, in the same way as there was for Mandy to do the training that she's actually just completed. So congratulations, Mandy, for all of the hard work that you've put in. Let's hear from Adam.
Like a lot of people who get involved with Samaritans, there was a point back in my history where I did call, and I had one of those periods in my life where things were spiraling out of control, and in desperation I called Samaritans. There was no magic, you know, no one fixed my problems for me, but being able to talk to someone who I didn't know, who had no dog in the fight, who had no knowledge of what I was going through, was really helpful. And that was, gosh, 20 or more years ago. And after that, there was nagged away at me that this was something, you know, there was good work being done here, and maybe it was something I could do. But it took decades for me to finally pluck up the courage and look into it a little bit more. I think, first of all, because, as you say, people have their own idea of what Samaritans do and who they are. And we can talk a little bit about, you know, what the truth is. But also, I think because I'd had a good experience, I almost didn't want that sort of bubble to be burst. I didn't want to join an organization and find out that maybe it wasn't what I thought it was and the people weren't the kind of people I thought they would be. So I ummed and ahed for quite a while. And then coming up to 2 years ago, I went on the website and went through a really good application process and then started on my journey to be a Samaritan. So I'm still very new at it. I'm definitely still learning, but what I've learned from my fellow volunteers, many of whom have been doing it for a very long time, is that you're always learning. So that's my journey that got me into Samaritans. It's quite a thorough process to get in. I was a little bit surprised, but very impressed that, you know, the application process, the interview that you go through, the sort of sessions that you're invited to get to know, with the other volunteers and how it works. And then following on from that, when I was successful and being invited to join as a probationer, all of the training up till that point and beyond is really, really good. I've been really impressed with how good the training is, how good the trainers are, and how supportive an environment it is to be in. They are really great people, which was good to know.
Which is excellent to know, because the Samaritans are an organisation that I think everybody is familiar with on some level or another. But I also think that it's an organisation that has a bit of mystery around it. If you've never been somebody who has accessed their services, Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, when I tell them, I don't tell everybody that I'm a Samaritan, but, you know, some of my family know and some of my friends know. And the general reaction is, oh, crikey, that must be grim. You know, you must continuously be talking to people who are suicidal and who are in a very, very bad way. And we do. You know, people do call in states of real crisis, and we do our best to listen and to help. But it isn't all like that. Some of the conversations I've had with people who've called, and, you know, any individual's definition of what crisis is will vary depending on their own life experience or where they are or their own grip on their situation at any moment in time. And to us, it doesn't matter. If someone calls and they really feel like they're losing their grip or they're not in control, or they're having it in the middle of a panic attack, you know, whatever, we're there and we'll listen and we'll do our best to get them through it. And I kind of didn't realize that, you know, my assumption was, and maybe one of the reasons it took me so long to get around to doing it, was I assumed that you would listen to people, you know, on a regular basis who wanted to end their life. And that's not the whole picture of what Samaritans do. You know, a lot of the people we talk to are lonely, and lonely for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's, you know, blindingly obvious why they'll feel lonely because of their situation, their life, and who they don't have around them. But I've spoken to people who've got big families around them, you know, people who've got quite a busy social life, people who've got all kinds of things that keep them occupied, but at times they feel completely lonely and unable to tell anyone how they're feeling. The biggest power of Samaritans, I think, certainly what I'm learning, is just to be able to say it, just to be able to say out loud what's on your mind, and to know that it's not going to be judged, or that the person isn't going to leap straight in and say, oh yeah, I know what's wrong with you, you need to do this, and it'll all be fine. Because it's not a timed GP appointment. It's not talking to someone who's known you for years and thinks they can, you know, diagnose you and work out what your problem is. We have no idea who's going to call. And we have no idea where they are or who they are. We just answer a call, and it could be anybody. They don't know who we are. We don't know who they are. It's a brilliant short-term sort of contract where they can just say what they want to say. They won't be judged. We won't be leaping in and telling them what the answer is, but we'll listen. And to be able to say whatever you want to say in that safe environment is really powerful. And to get to the end of a conversation with someone, and it doesn't happen all the time, it's two people talking to each other. And sometimes, you know, there'll be a really good connection and a really good conversation, sometimes less so because we're all individuals. But more often than not, to be able to get to an end of a conversation and for the caller to be able to say, look, that's helped, hasn't fixed all my problems, but it's actually got me into a, you know, a better situation than I was in when I first called. That's amazing. And at its heart, that's the secret of Samaritans, that there is no secret. We just listen and let people say what they want to say, and we don't judge them. We don't pass an opinion on what they should do or while they're in the situation they're in. We are a listening service, and yeah, we listen.
A tiny little phrase with an incredibly powerful message there. Samaritans are there to listen, willing to listen. We talked a lot about loneliness last week on the show, and it was obvious from the response that I had from people who'd listened that it tapped into maybe some deficits that some people have, and some people felt that they didn't have people that they could talk to. And I think what we're going to hear over the course of this show from Adam is that there is always someone there to listen if we are prepared to act on the invitation from the Samaritans to make that call. And I'll share this information over the course of the show. And I'll also put it on the Joining the Dots webpage on the Radio Glamorgan website. But just to let you know that if you want to call anytime, 24/7, the Samaritans number is 116123. 116123. They also have an online chat service, which is available at certain times of the day. And in certain parts of the country, including in Cardiff, Newport and Bridgend, there is an opportunity to speak to people face to face by visiting the branch. Now, all of this information is available on the Samaritans website, which is samaritans.org. And if you're living in Wales, it's /Wales. But if you go on to the Samaritans website, samaritans.org, all of the information, including the country that you can get specific information about, is available on that website. And we'll hear more from Adam after this. And that was You Got a Friend in Me from the Toy Story franchise. Hugely appropriate, given what we're talking about today. Back now to Adam, a volunteer with the Samaritans, and I asked him what people could expect when they first got in touch.
We'll say, Samaritans, can I help you? Or something as simple as that. And then it kind of depends on who's on the end of the line. Sometimes someone's almost prepared a speech. A caller will, there are things they want to say, and they'll tell you quite rapidly and quite clearly what's on their mind. Equally, they may have called with, you know, literally out of desperation. They've seen the number, they know it's 24/7, and they'll call us, and then there can be a lot of silence while they're summoning up the courage, and we'll encourage them as carefully and as calmly and empathetically as we can to say what's on their mind. Those conversations, well, they're just conversations. Sometimes what they start talking about when you've talked for a while is not the reason they called. That was the opener, you know, that was the thing to get the conversation going. Sometimes we'll pick up on something they've said and we'll gently ask a little bit more about a particular thing they've talked about or an experience, and that can lead to a really useful and fulfilling conversation, because we talk to people who've been dealing with things for a very, very long time and have often had mixed experiences with support from the NHS and from, you know, other bodies, and they may actually tell us something that they haven't told someone for years and years and years. And that is really humbling if someone's actually felt able to tell you something they couldn't tell their family or their friends or their partner or whatever. That's huge and, yeah, really humbling.
So when you're in the process of having those conversations, I'm assuming that part of your training is to help people to say whatever it is they need to say or they want to say. But I guess lots of people don't know.
So we have a thing called the Samaritan's Listening Wheel, which we have up in front of us, which is basically common sense tips for a conversation. We will often say back to them something that they've said previously. You know, earlier you said about this, which can help to bring the conversation back around. A lot of it is just being human, just actually listening. And that is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this, because elsewhere in my life, I'm a sort of a fixing person. And if the phone rings, it's because someone really needs some help with something and I need to do it quickly. All of my career really has been doing that kind of thing, which is great and it's brilliant for the ego, but it doesn't make you a great listener. And I want it to be that. So that's what the training does. That's how we respond. So I mentioned silence earlier on. Again, for me, silence in a conversation is something that makes me feel quite uncomfortable. I've had to learn that silence is really important, because it might be the other person gathering their thoughts. It might be me gathering my thoughts, and better to have a pause and a thought before leaping in. So silence, playing things back, just being encouraging. There are silences and just saying to people, that's okay, you know, take your time when you're ready. Tell me what you want to tell me. Really basic conversational stuff, but they're fantastic skills to learn, because a lot of the time in conversation, filling those gaps is important, finding something to say even when there might not be anything relevant. Things we might do in day-to-day don't necessarily help the person you're listening to find a way to say what they're saying. And as I say, then picking up, you know, sometimes there'll be clues. Or sometimes they'll start a bit of the conversation and stop themselves. With as much care as possible, you can come back to it later and say, can I just ask you, earlier on you said about this. What did you mean?
Is there a typical caller?
No, which is why it's always learning. You can have some really interesting experiences, and I think this is probably because I'm still new to it and I'm very, very green. The danger is that you think it is a typical caller. So I did speak to someone quite a while ago now, who I assumed, because they told me that they lived on their own and they'd been in hospital and they were home now and having a long recuperation, I kind of checked that off in my head as, this must be a person who is really lonely. So you do start to think about, I wonder which direction the conversation will go, you know, and what I might ask. But it was a big lesson to me that, you know, don't file people into boxes. Don't say, oh, I know what type of call this is. I know where this is going, because it'll bite you. And that one did. It turned into a lovely conversation. So, yeah, not a typical caller at all.
Not a typical caller, then. Is there a typical age demographic?
Also, no. One of the challenges, given that we don't know the callers and we don't know anything about them unless they tell us, is if the caller is young. You know, we have safeguarding responsibilities and we have to be sure that we are doing the right thing if we get a call from a child who tells us things that we really should act on. But again, we do not know. We have no information about who our callers are. It's completely anonymous. But we do have to follow some processes and procedures and, if necessary, ask for information that would allow us to get help and get more support. But no, people of all ages, come back to the loneliness point, people of all ages can feel very isolated and very lonely. People with high-powered careers, people who are facing retirement and wondering what it will be, older people who have found families grow up and move away. Yeah, people who have made mistakes, you know, people who have pushed family and friends away and then, you know, and then realise that maybe something that they shouldn't have done. Yeah, all sorts of ages.
Taylor Swift and This Love here on Joining the Dots on Hospital Radio Glamorgan with me, Julie Kissick. We'll be taking tips for keeping safe in this heat later in the show, and we'll hear the third part of my interview with Adam from the Samaritans. That's all after Lady Gaga and Paparazzi. The final part of my interview with Adam, I asked him how long he spent answering calls, and what a shift would typically look like from a volunteer's perspective.
Different Samaritan's branches work in different ways, and they've got a degree of autonomy as to how they organise themselves. We tend to do 3-hour shifts. And some people will do a double. I've yet to do 6 hours answering calls, but generally they're 3 hours.
And are you likely to have 2 or 3 queens in that 3 hours, or are you likely to have 1 call, or how does it work?
It depends. Yeah, 3 for maybe is typical, but you know, I've done a shift which was, you know, a particularly tricky caller going through a lot, which basically filled almost the whole shift. That's not usual. And I've also had a situation where a call takes you over the duration of your shift. But yeah, I mean, probably 3 or 4 callers. And that can include people who will call and then maybe not feel able to speak. You know, sometimes there'll just be silence on the end of the line. So we'll offer what support we can and encourage them to call again when they feel ready, or do our online chat, which is something Samaritans are trialling, where you can just text chat. And some people feel more comfortable doing that.
But you would imagine that that's probably easier for a younger person, whereas my understanding would be that probably older people would need to have those sorts of conversations.
I think that's right. And it does lead to a different sort of conversation. You know, you can't pick up on tone of voice or mood in that way. But also, I think it can be a confidentiality thing as well. I think I've certainly done some online chats where I've had the impression that it's someone who is not in a private place, but because they can text message privately, that they're able to say things that they wouldn't be able to say out loud.
Well, somebody who's high profile.
Indeed.
Somebody who thinks, well, if I speak, they will know who I am.
Quite possibly.
With regards to helping people, so being able to have those conversations and... Again, when I think of having conversations with people in whatever capacity, if I'm trying to help, I would be desperate to find out, you know, what happened next, or if they called again, would I be able to speak to them? Or I guess you don't have access to any of that sort of information.
No, we keep a record of each call, but that is literally just to track the type of things that were talked about. There's no identifiable information in that at all, and it is one of the tricky things sometimes that you walk away from a shift I should say there's really good support. So when we end a shift, we don't just go, we always debrief to another Samaritan, and occasionally I've done a debrief with a shift leader about a call that's been particularly difficult, and that shift leader later in the day has called me back to check I'm okay. You know, we do a lot of that because sometimes calls do stay with you.
Of course.
We have to kind of deal with the fact that it's a one-off conversation and we will never know who that person was and we'll never hear from them again.
And I guess that's part of your training, is it? Because those sorts of things, I guess, are really important for you to know from the get-go, that this isn't a person that you're going to be able to invest in. Mm. This is literally a 20-minute phone call or a 3-hour phone call or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you probably will never hear from them again, as you say.
Yeah, and in some ways that helps, because there is no pressure on us to come up with a big long-term plan to, you know, completely transform this person's life. We're there because in a moment of crisis they needed someone to listen to them. And a lot of what we do, well, all of what we do is not about, you know, is about not giving advice. A lot of what we do is literally just trying to get them to think about their own situation. You know, so a lot of the kind of questions we'll ask will be, you know, what do you think you could do about that? And what kind of things have you tried? And those sorts of questions. We will, if there's a particular issue or challenge that they're dealing with, we will sometimes suggest to them other organisations they could speak to.
And a reminder that the number for the Samaritans is 116 123. That's 116 123. Text chat options are available. And if you enter your location postcode onto the website samaritans.org, you can find a branch option. It will tell you whether a face-to-face service is available near where you are. Next week, we'll hear the final part of that interview with Adam, and I'll tell you about a July fundraising appeal by the Cardiff branch of the Samaritans. It's a Samarathon, and it's a virtual marathon which can be completed at your own pace in July. So more from Adam and more on the Samarathon next week. Well, we're coming towards the end of June and we're basking in sunshine here in South East Wales. We're notoriously bad at never being satisfied with the weather here in the UK, aren't we? And most of us are probably pleased when we see the sun as opposed to the rain. But these are very unusual conditions, and the Met Office has issued an amber heat health alert for the first 4 days of this week. It says temperatures across much of Wales and England could peak to about 38 degrees centigrade, which is 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The amber warnings have been extended from 2 to 4 days, and temperatures are widely expected to exceed 30 degrees centigrade, that's 86 degrees Fahrenheit, and even nighttime temperatures could stay above 20 degrees centigrade, 68 degrees Fahrenheit. But what does that mean for us all practically? Well, it means we're in more danger than we're used to at this time of year, because we're really not used to this level of heat, are we? So I'm going to share the advice that's been issued by the Met Office, which most of us will know, but many of us could probably do with being reminded about. Because we know that every year tragedies happen in heat because people ignore those basic common sense pieces of advice. And we all want to enjoy the sunshine, not suffer as a result of it. So let's start with the first part of advice, which is around the time of day that we are advised not to be outside. And generally, that's supposed to be between 11 and 3. So 11 in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Those 4 hours are when the UV rays are the strongest and we're most likely to be burnt. However, in this kind of heat, I would have thought that the best advice, and I'm not an official Met Office spokesperson, but I would have thought that the best advice, if you don't need to be outside, is to stay indoors if you possibly can. And look out for those who may struggle to keep themselves cool and hydrated. And according to the guidance, this is older people, those with underlying conditions, and those who live alone, because they're particularly at risk. Stay cool indoors. Close curtains in rooms that face the sun to keep the indoor spaces cooler. And counterintuitively, closing doors and windows in the heat can help to keep things cooler inside. Drink plenty of fluids. Water is the top choice always. And avoid excess alcohol. Never leave anyone in a closed, parked vehicle, especially infants, elderly, young children or animals. Please don't leave dogs in hot cars. Please, please, please don't do that. If you have to go out into the heat, then walk in the shade. Obviously apply sunscreen and wear a wide-brimmed hat if you have one. Avoid any type of physical exertion in the hottest parts of the day. And make sure that you take something with you to drink, i.e. water, if you're travelling. You never know when your journey might take longer than you'd planned. Keep up to date with the latest weather forecast and any extreme heat warnings. And if you're going into open water to cool down, take care and follow local safety advice. So please stay safe and be alert over the next few days. And later in the show, some advice on looking after our pets. Emily Sandé, and next to me here on Hospital Radio Glamorgan, and I've just heard a massive clap of thunder and the heavens have opened, which I don't remember seeing on the weather map earlier. I hope you weren't caught out by the downpour, and I hope if you're listening to this and it is pouring down where you are, that my top tips on keeping safe and now on keeping our pets safe in this heat won't sound too out of place. I'm sure the sun is going to return because they can't get it wrong, surely. Anyway, if the heat does return, and I'm sure it will, this is what the RSPCA is suggesting that we do and don't do when it comes to looking after our pets. So make sure all pets always have access to fresh water to drink, adequate ventilation, and shade from direct sunlight. Don't exercise dogs in the hottest parts of the day, especially older dogs, flat-faced breeds, or animals with known heart or lung conditions, and stick to early morning or late evening walks. And do remember the 5-second tarmac test before taking a dog out for a walk. If it feels too hot on the ground for your hand, then it's too hot for your dog's paws. A great tip for someone like me who has rabbits, freeze plastic bottles of water and place them in your rabbit's enclosure to help them stay cool alongside plenty of fresh water. Lightly misting rabbit's ears with cold water is also an effective way to keep them cool if it doesn't stress them out. I'm afraid it does with mine, but it's a good tip if it doesn't. And you can provide extra shade to guinea pigs and rabbits by covering the top of wire mesh runs with damp towels. And I have to say, I think that's a really effective thing to do. Some breeds of cats and dogs, particularly those with lighter coloured or finer fur, may benefit from pet-safe sun cream, especially on the ear tips, which are prone to sunburn. And of course, spare a thought for wild animals by keeping bowls of water for wildlife such as birds and hedgehogs. Watch out for early signs of heat stroke such as heavy panting, restlessness and lack of coordination, and contact a vet immediately if you have any concerns about your pet's health. Well, I hope despite the downpour that those will be helpful to some, if not all of you. And I have to say, personally, I hope that the weather forecasters have got the intensity of the heat that they've predicted over the next few days wrong. I would be more than happy with it to be much, much cooler, but that's me. And that's just about it for another week. I'm back on Friday with All About Sport at 6 o'clock. Do join me then if you can. But definitely let's make a date for next Monday at 5. Stay safe.